Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
We're starting the show. We're starting the show. Hey, we're starting the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Command Zone. My name is Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Woohoo!
Do we have to keep doing that? We can stop that, right?
We can stop that. Yeah, I stopped clapping. Episode 94 is here. Let's take a moment to say thank you to all the fans and all the people that are contributing to the show. That was terrible of pronouncing the word contributing. We got a ton of iTunes reviews this week, and that was really sweet. 30 new ones, you said?
Yeah, a little over 30. So that was pretty awesome. Thank you for taking the time to write some nice reviews. For those of you that did, for those of you that didn't, no thank you to you.
No thank you, but thank you for still listening to the podcast. Maybe they thought about it. They just didn't.
The good thing about iTunes is it's not going anywhere. So at any point when you think of it, you could go fill out a review. We're very happy. We have a ton of reviews. It makes the show look really good. So thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, I appreciate it because the show is actually horrible. And the more we can confuse people and make them think.
Fake them out.
Yeah, exactly. We actually have something more exciting to announce.
Man, what a week.
What a week.
We had a lot of stuff happen last week.
I have been drinking a lot of coffee this week.
Yeah, you've been super, super busy. We're going to talk about another one of your projects later on, but this is ours. And even another project that you and I were doing with the professor. If you have not heard, Kitchen Table Fables, which is something we've been teasing on the show and on Twitter and online in general, came out last Woo-hoo! Week. Yeah, we had two videos come out. And
by the time you hear this, the third one will be out as well.
Yep, the third one will be out also. They're called Permission, The Flicker, and Basilisk Caller.
Ooh, a card that you may know what it does.
Which maybe you could even guess what the skit's about if you haven't seen it. Now, here's the thing about Kitchen Table Fables. They're short comedy sketches about the game of Magic. They're not like an episode of the Command Zone. I think that's confused some people because I've been like, did you watch this yet? And they're like, oh, I haven't had time. And I'm like, no, they're 90 seconds.
Yeah.
They're not even 2 minutes long.
It's like a commercial break from the Command Zone.
Yeah, you can just go check it out really fast.
We should just play one during the episode and be like, we're sponsored by Kitchen Table Fables today, guys.
It might not make any sense without the visuals. I don't know. The Basilisk Caller would probably still work, honestly.
Yeah, I think so.
If you haven't watched it, we would really encourage you to. We did it with the professor again. We're very proud of them. They got a really good response. People are very, they're liking them quite a bit. And we're trying to get the word out.
Yeah,
to get as many views as possible because we do want to make more.
Yeah. Fortunately, we've had a little bit of help. Everyone that has tweeted about the videos, thank you so much. And Blake Rasmussen, Blake PR on Twitter, actually included Kitchen Table Fables in his daily update articles on the mothership. And that was a great honor to see our videos pop up there with the professor. Very happy to see that.
Yeah, Blake's articles are actually really cool. If you don't know about those, on the Mothership, which is the Wizards website, Blake is doing a daily update where he sort of gathers, Magic the Gathering, gathers a bunch of the community stuff that's going on, articles people are writing, videos they're putting out, podcasts, any type of community-created content and sort of gathers them all in this article every single day.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like a journal. Like, if you wanted just to catch up on everything that was happening, you'll find it in this one single place. And I think it's a really, really smart move on their part to have to sort of implement this article every day.
Yeah, it's great. I've found stuff that I didn't even know existed just by following along. So I would definitely say it's a good idea to check that out. It's the Daily Update article, again, by Blake. And it's on the Wizards website, which we call the Mothership.
Yeah, and also give Blake a follow at BlakePR. He's definitely helped out the show in the past, so we are always grateful to you.
Yeah,
Blake.
And a lot of help for Kitchen Table Fables, which is great.
I haven't gotten to play Commander with him yet, though. He was at our Vegas meetup. I didn't get to play with him.
I didn't even get to play Conspiracy with him.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, we'll get that done. Blake,
we'll get that done.
We just want to run this. There's got to be a GP or something at some point.
L.A.
GPLA, Blake, you're coming, right?
You're coming. If you're not, you are now. But yes, guys, please watch Kitchen Table Fables. It's on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/The Command Zone Podcast. It would be, it would make us so happy if you guys shared them with your friends or tweeted about it, did whatever, and just put the word out, because we want to spread these around to people that don't even play Magic, and hopefully they can maybe bring them into the game, seeing how interesting the interactions are.
How fun and funny it can be.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and also one of the things that's going to determine if we continue to do the series is just going to be the reaction, mm-hmm. You know, and it's sort of if there's a big call for more, which there already is, but we just want to see how big that can get. And also, you know, anybody you share it with and they share it with other people, as big as it can get, will really help the future episodes, because it allows us to sort of make them bigger and bigger. So,
yeah, exactly. If you guys didn't know, we filmed them, almost 4 months ago.
It was right
ago
before
now.
Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yeah, so several months ago, and it took between that point and now, but with all of our other work, to get them finished. And we're talking about 5 minutes of content here.
Right.
So there was a lot of work that went into it. So we really want to see a positive response before we decide to do more.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and you know, we would like to raise some budget for this one, and that'll be easier to do if the view count's just high. So please do share those and tweet those out and whatever.
Not to mention bringing some cool guests. We have some potential people lined up already.
Oh, man, we're talking to all the names in Magic about bringing them on Kitchen Table Fables, so there's mm-hmm. that also. Oh, man, it was pre-release weekend last weekend.
Yeah, it was really exciting. Thanks, guys, for tweeting at us or commenting what you guys polled, how you guys did in the Two-Headed Giant events. Josh and I got to play one.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I don't think we'd done a Two-Headed Giant since Magic 2015, I think, was what we decided.
I barely even remember doing that, if that was the case. It was certainly not a set designed for Two-Headed Giant.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. And obviously, it's more made for Commander players, because we're more used to sort of the, you know, not the one-on-one, like, spiky showdown, the more, like, craziness of, you know, four decks, 2-on-2. I really liked it. It was a lot of fun. And, you know,
I did too. It was a lot of fun building the decks too, and sort of being like, all right, you're the beatdown and you're this, you know, because you could really focus each deck and doing one thing.
Yeah, I loved my deck. My deck was all counterspells and card draw. That's like all it did. And it was the most fun thing ever.
And you were exiling cards out of people's hands with Mind Melter.
Yeah, it was like I had all activated abilities. Of course, that's like such
perfect.
A Josh thing. Like, oh no, I'm not using any cards in hand. I just have all my abilities are on creatures on board.
Yeah.
And yours was like tap all your dudes. It was like ally, cohort,
life gain. And we had enough of the guys to like the Zulaport Cutthroat and then the Kalastra Healer. I made the deck that I hate playing against, essentially.
It was perfect, though, because I don't think we won a single game by attacking.
No. I mean, we would finish games that way, but if you start at 30 life, we probably took them down to 5 or 6 because of those cards, and then just found a way to peck at them in the air and win the game.
My favorite game that we won was where we cast Radiant Flames to kill our own creatures so that Zulaport Cutthroat would finish them off.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. We went 3-1.
Yep.
You know, I was happy. Our pool was not crazy. In fact, our pool wasn't even that great. We only had like one bomb card. It was Eldrazi Displacer.
Yeah, the card is insane. But it didn't even win us the majority of the games.
I think we only got it out like once.
Honestly, Kalastra Healer was the strongest card in my deck by far.
It says each opponent. Yeah, and you had like, I don't know, 16 allies?
Yeah, I loaded the deck with allies. So it was nice. We had all that synergy stuff. It was a 4-round event. We went 3-1. Pretty good. I felt it was pretty respectable.
I hope that they run Two-Headed Giant events throughout, since it's designed for it. Because Two-Headed Giant event on pre-release weekend is pretty normal, at least at our LGSs. We don't always do them, but they're usually there. But then they just go away.
Yeah, I really do hope they keep running them. That was a lot of fun. And I think it was also fun because it was really easy to play together because we played so much Magic in the past.
Oh, yeah. We didn't barely have to talk sometimes. Well, you know, Two-Headed Giant naturally is a slower type of game. Yeah. And we'd be against opponents who don't play together all the time. And they'd be like, 5 minutes, and then they'd go, okay, we do this, and we'd be like, okay, tap, 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 do this, go.
Go, yeah. It's like, we planned our turn out in advance. We know the feeling of waiting for your turn, thanks to Commander. I think that's going to go down in history as one of my favorite pre-releases I've ever done, just because it's so much fun to play that kind of weird format with cards that are designed for it, too.
Yeah, that was a really interesting thing that they designed the format for that, and people knew it, too, because that Two-Headed Giant event that we were in, at least, was very large. I think when we did the M15 one, there was like 7 teams. I think it was like, that's not very many people. That's 14 people because people just weren't drawn to it. I think there was like 42 or 43 teams.
Yeah, it was a big event. It took like 5 hours and we got three packs, so value.
Worth it. Totally worth it.
Well, speaking of like great release stories, I recently read another article. Magic, by the way, on the Wizards website, they've leveled up. They're inviting all sorts of new people sort of to come in and create content for them. And
I think it was their New Year's resolution or something, because they totally overhauled the Wizards website. I read this article too. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was Maria Bartoli, who you guys may know as the Maria in Megan and Maria of MTA Cast. The ladies have been on the show before. I was with them at the Community Cup. And this it's just a whole article that's Magic Lifestyle, and it's just called Release Stories. And it was great because you get to see what happens in Canada, Japan, and all parts of the world. And like these are really personal, sweet stories. I am really excited about both Blake's article and Maria's articles, because this is the sort of Magic stuff that I want to consume. I don't want salty tears on Reddit.
Or just another decklist article, you know? Like, there's a million of those. No, Maria's stuff is great. I think it's tagged as, like, a Magic Lifestyles series. And really interesting to see how in different areas of the world and different cultures, they sort of approach the release days and the pre-release days a little bit differently. I really enjoyed the article. Maria did a really great job. Obviously, Magic the Amateuring, one of the best podcasts out there.
Make sure you guys listen to them if you have not. They're called Magic the Amateuring, but they are far from amateurs.
If you watch the Community Cup, Megan and Maria like carried the team.
They carried the team.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Kenji and Doc and I were like, yeah, you guys go. Even Yoel was like, dang, you guys are killing it. Yoel Larson, Pro Tour winner.
Yeah, exactly. Love that guy. Definitely listen to Magic the Amateuring. I know that word amateuring sort of throws people off sometimes because they think, oh, I'm not an amateur. Listen, Megan and Maria know what they're talking about. They're very, very good. They would kick my butt at Limited for sure.
Yeah. And they're so funny together. They've been best friends for years, so it's great.
That's the best thing about their show, is it's just hilarious start to finish.
Yeah. I love that.
All right. Main topic?
Yeah. So you guys will like this one. It's been a week since Profit the Proof.
You'll like it or you'll hate it.
Yeah. You'll definitely have a reaction to it, we hope. It's been a week since El Profeta the Crucifix has been banned.
I still haven't healed. It's too soon.
I know. It's really sad. I haven't taken her out of the decks yet.
I haven't either, and we're supposed to play with our group tomorrow, and I'm like, I don't know when between now and then I'm going to be able to take the card out. Guys, I still have her.
Yeah, and if I play her, she's just going to be like a waste.
Can we just keep her legal for this one more weekend?
Oh my god.
Just so I can say goodbye.
Everyone else is like, no. And then you play her, and then everyone goes, oh my god. Oh shoot. Josh wins.
Yeah, that's true. Because then if you win, they'll be like, yeah, but you're playing a banned card, dude.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah. Anyway, because the Prophet of Crucifix has been banned, also Splinter Twin in Modern, we thought it'd be a great time to talk about what cards that we also think could be on the chopping block. We know that the rules committee has like a watch list of cards. We want to talk about today what me and Josh think are the most bannable cards in Commander.
Controversy.
We are not saying that you need to ban these cards. We are saying they are potentially, keyword, bannable.
And that's just based on what's already been banned. We're not calling for the bans. In fact, I'm going to say this right now. I don't like bans in general. I probably wouldn't have banned Prophet of Crucifix. I'm okay that she was banned. I do believe she's of a high power level.
Definitely high enough.
But I'm generally on the side of like, let's not ban very many cards at all.
So is Sheldon, actually, and he said that when he came on the show.
Yeah. I would just probably ban power, and maybe that's it.
Not channel? Know?
Okay.
Not Emrakul?
I don't know if I'd ban Emrakul. I don't know. Rhyme
time.
Listen, here we go. Josh is like...
How could you not ban... Sundering Titan. That card.
Okay. Listen, it's just hard to tell where the line is. You know, the line keeps getting pushed, and it keeps getting pushed, and now we're at Prophet of Crucifix, and I feel like, okay, fine, channel.
Yeah.
But Prophet of Crucifix is not even close to on the power level of channel.
True. I mean, what you can do turn one with channel is...
Or turn two.
Turn two, right.
Yeah, turn three or whatever. Yeah. Anyway... I just want to say, because we're going to get a lot of people saying, that doesn't need to be banned. Why do you guys want this to be banned? I don't want any of these cards to be banned. But this is the type of discussion that's fun to have, which is like, well, Prophet of Crucifix has been around for a while. It's not like they banned her like a couple months after she came out. She's been out for a couple of years. And so there's cards that are out there that could be banned in the future. And so we want to take a hard look at some of those cards that might be sort of near that edge And, you know, just so that you're aware and we're aware of what's possible.
Yeah, very, very interesting to talk about. So let's just get going. We're going to start with some creatures. It's the largest category. We have creatures, legendary creatures, instants and sorceries, artifacts, enchantments, and land, of course. First up on the list, one of my favorite cards of all time, the Consecrated Sphinx.
Consecrated Sphinx.
We talk about this card a lot as well because card draw is so very, very important. And I also never see the card art correctly for this card. If you guys look at the art, by the way, if you're watching the video on youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, you'll see that it looks like a giant flying bug. But actually, look closer. Its face is actually this little white triangular thing on the front of the card. And what looks like its giant eyeballs is just like a glowing neck piece or something. It's bizarre. Anyway, Consecrated Sphinx, 4BB. It's a creature Sphinx. It's a 4/6 flying Sphinx. Whenever an opponent draws a card, you may draw 2 cards. Incredibly powerful, because as soon as you cast this and say pass the turn, they draw their first card, you're drawing 2.
You almost always, at the very least, get, you know, 1 extra card out of it.
Yeah.
Which for 6 mana is not amazing. But generally, you're going to look for that spot where everybody's tapped out,
mm-hmm.
and then you play it. And then you draw 2 cards. And then if that player can't kill the Sphinx, now you've drawn 4 cards.
Yeah.
And if that player can't kill the Sphinx, you've drawn 6 cards.
Not
and
to mention, if someone has Howling Mine out, you're drawing way more than 2 cards. If someone has another Consecrated Sphinx out, you two can literally draw your whole deck and just look at each other and go, you want to go? I've done this like 4 or 5 times. Be like, you want to do this? And the other person goes, yeah. And then we just keep going until we draw our whole deck.
So you're like, no, I'm good. Okay.
Yeah, all right, cool. I think I'm good too. And it's like my my hand's bigger than my deck right now.
Yeah, this card is extremely powerful. It's sort of a auto-include in all blue decks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only deck I have that has blue in it that wouldn't want a Consecrated Sphinx is Mizzix.
Mizzix, yeah.
Yeah, it fits a lot of the criteria for what would be bannable in that it becomes sort of ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
The power level is extremely high. In fact, Consecrated Sphinx is probably one of the reasons that Prophet of Krufix is so good. Because if you ever have both of those things, then now you've got card draw with your,
yeah,
you know, basically unlimited mana and everything at flash beat.
The argument also that people have for Prophet, which is like just single target, remove it. The problem with that and the reason that Consecrated Sphinx is similarly powerful is that it doesn't, I mean, you can remove the Prophet after 1 turn or 2 turns or 3 turns, but every turn that you are unable to and they just happen to catch you out or are able to counter you and holding up enough mana for that is just exponentially worse for you.
Yeah, because think about Prophet. What Prophet does is you play her and then you immediately untap. So now the ability to kill the Prophet's a lot tougher because the person who has the Prophet has all their mana available to them. The Consecrated Sphinx is similar in that now they have all the cards available to them. So if they're playing a deck that has counterspells,
yeah,
you're unlikely to catch them without any counterspells because if they've drawn 6 cards. Now, the mana is not an issue, but Prophet of Krufix doesn't give you cards. So it's sort of sneakily similar, I would say,
yeah,
to the Prophet. Obviously, we're going to compare a lot of these cards to the Prophet because it was the one that was most recently banned. So that's where we know the line is right now. I'm on the side, obviously, of not banning anything. I don't think Consecrated Sphinx is quite as good as Prophet,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it is, and sometimes it's better.
Yeah, definitely. Not to mention, it's a 4/6 flyer. Like it's not going to die to like a 2 damage to every creature kind of thing, or a massacre.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You know, it's going to stick around, and it can block. It's a good card.
It's a very good card.
I want more.
It's not cheap, and it's going in the wrong direction.
What do you mean? It's going in the direction it probably should.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Look, you know, if you're first breaking this card in a Legacy cube, too, like it's definitely powerful, and you're only drawing 2 cards off it each turn, you know?
And it's still broken.
Yeah, it's still broken.
All right, the next card on the list is Sarah Ascendant. We've talked about this card a lot. It's a 1 white mana for a 1/1 human monk with lifelink. But it says, as long as you have 30 or more life, Sarah Ascendant gets +5/+5, and has flying.
Yep.
So because we start with 40 life, it's just almost always a 6/6 flying lifelinker for 1 white mana.
This makes me wish I played Magic back during M11, because I'm sure I would have cracked so many of these and been like, what the heck am I ever going to do with this card?
Yeah, because it's crap.
Yeah, it's awful. Otherwise, if you're not playing Commander. But
in Commander, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I, you know, some people have... We get emails once in a while, and people are like, your playgroup's totally different than my playgroup, because in my playgroup, this card's not good, and you guys talk about Insurrection all the time, and it's not that good, which, by the way, Insurrection's not that good in our playgroup either.
Yeah, it quickly died down once it got cast twice.
Yeah, it's easy to stop, but it's just the go-to sort of example of a card that, if you do resolve it, wins the game.
Yeah.
But Sarah Ascendant, somebody told us that recently. I'm like, I'm sorry, Sarah Ascendant's always good.
Yeah.
It costs one mana, and it does stuff like 12-point life swing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not something any other card can really do.
Yeah, a turn one Sarah Ascendant forces people to try and remove it if they can with a one mana spell by the first time the first turn is over, and then you get 6 points of life and you take someone down by six. Nuts.
And you know, people do play Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile, obviously, in our format, but they don't. Those are two cards. If they don't have that, what's the other card that cheaply removes this card?
Slaughter Pact, turn one.
Yeah, you can't do that. You know, nobody's really running Doomblades and stuff. Now, Utterend, but that's turn four.
Yeah.
You can take 24 damage from this thing before you Utterend it.
Not to mention, if you're playing the Sarah Ascendant out, you're just not going to go after the player that's playing white. Just start swinging at anyone else.
Yeah, then the white player's like, I don't need to kill it yet. I'll just hold up one white mana.
Yeah, and I can kill anything else that I want to while my Sarah Ascendant buddy over here is taking down the whole table.
Yeah, Vindicate, like, that's turn three. You've taken at least 12 damage. That's a 24-point life swing from one card. And also, you won for one, so you're not even... It doesn't hurt. Like, what's the downside? This card is very good. It's sort of good because of a loophole. We all know it shouldn't say 30 life. It should say 10 more than your starting life total.
Yeah, that's how they would print it today if they could reprint this card.
Yeah, so I wish they could Oracle it for various reasons. Obviously, they cannot, but... I would not ban this card, and I think one of the reasons I wouldn't ban it is that we often play with four or more players, and in that instance, it's not as good, because it usually puts such a huge target on your back that, you get off to a huge lead, but now it's 3v1.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's really just you're gaining life, which isn't the most significant thing in order to win the game.
It's good, but it's not. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Moving on, we have one of Craig Blanchett's favorite cards. And a card that I do not own but want to. It's Blightsteel Colossus. Holy moly, it's a 12-mana card. It's colorless. It's an artifact creature golem that is an 11-11 trample, infect, indestructible. Dun, dun, dun. And if Blightsteel Colossus will be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal it and shuffle it into its owner's library instead. So it's got the sort of the Kozilek Ulamog syndrome, where he does...
Which is actually really good in our format because it stops you from being decked.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, they put this in there because they don't want you to reanimate a giant target for very cheap. This card's ridiculous, but
this leads to a lot of sort of auto wins. I mean, if you can sort of arc bond or something, or what's that, Chandra's
ignition, yeah,
on this, that just sort of blows up, infects everybody, you win it. It's very good. I mean, 11-11, Trample, Infect, indestructible.
Indestructible, yeah. I think that's the big one here. Trample is very important as well. It does cost 12, though, and I can see why that is a big part of it.
But you can sneak it out.
You can sneak it out. Yeah, it's true. And I think the Trample is really, really relevant when it comes to Infect, not to mention you pair this with any number of, Infect decks usually run combat tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a way, I think it's just a very powerful deck in that card, as is Skitherix. Because it's just a very easy way to get someone to the requisite life poison counters to die.
Yeah, well, one hit with this thing and you just die in our format. And again, this is like Sarah's Ascendant is sort of taking advantage of a loophole in the system. Blightsteel is sort of also because we still die to the same amount of poison counters that you would in like normal magic, in like life. Modern.
Yeah,
they haven't upped the amount of poison counters it takes. So it feels weird. It feels sort of wrong when Blightsteel comes out, swings at you once, and kills you.
Yep, and that's definitely why this is on the potentially bannable cards, because Infect is just one of those things that hasn't been errated to fit Commander, and maybe it doesn't need to be because it's a multiplayer format. Maybe it needs to just stay at 10 and not bump up to 15 or 20.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely played with and against Blightsteels, and they're very good, but I don't think they're like crazy, can't be beaten. The next one on the list is Felidar Sovereign. Falls into a similar category. It's a 6-mana, 4/2 white for a 4/6 with vigilance and lifelink. But the really salient detail is at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 40 or more life, you win the game.
Dun, dun, dun. You win the game. Great words. By the way, another card that got banned because it said you win the game was Coalition Victory.
Yes, the if you
control a land of each basic land type and a creature of each color. So
too easy to control a creature of each color because you just
play Chromat.
And yet it's too easy to have 40 or more life because you start with it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that Coalition Victory would get banned, but not Felidar Sovereign. In fact, Felidar Sovereign was just reprinted in Modern Masters 2.
It's true. I mean, here's the thing. Coalition Victory is a sorcery, so it is a bit easier to get out and keep around. Felidar needs to sit there and wait for your upkeep, but a lot of people just flash it out.
Yeah, if you flash it in on the end step before your turn. Yeah.
If you're playing a deck like Alora or just any kind of life gain deck, if you have Serra Ascendant, this card is just sometimes a way to cheese a win.
Sometimes even if you're not playing those decks, you know, a lot of times you can be in turn 6-7 and nobody's really taking damage yet and you're just at 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think they don't need to ban this card because once you do that one time, you'll realize that it's just not very satisfying.
Yeah.
And you probably won't do it anymore.
You'll self-police.
Yeah, you just played a card and then everybody shuffled up, but it doesn't feel great. You didn't outsmart anybody, you know?
You think you may have.
After you do it, I promise you will not feel like you outsmarted anyone.
Yeah, no one will like you either. Now, talking about cards that are oppressive, let's talk about Iona, Shield of Emyria. 6WW for a 7/7 legendary creature angel flying. As Iona, Shield of Emyria, enters the battlefield, choose a color. Your opponents can't cast spells of the chosen color. Iona is also known as, are you playing a monocolor deck? Well, now you're not.
Now you're not playing.
Yeah, you're not playing at all.
You're just not playing Magic.
So I think, resolved a this against your Titania deck, right?
Yeah, that was awesome. We're at the LGS, and he's like, oh, I feel bad. And I'm like, what? And he plays Iona. I'm like, okay, you win.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want me to do? I'm in green. Like, there's literally nothing I can do about it because this was before Devoid even exists either. And I can't counter it. So What am I supposed to do? You know, unless I draw my one Nivinural's Disc or something. This is a card I would be fine if they did ban, and not from a pure power level standpoint, just from a, like, it's just not in any way fun.
Yeah, it doesn't engender a positive gameplay experience, I know, is the, sort of their wording.
I mean, let's say there was a list of pros and cons for Iona. What is in the pro column?
She looks cool.
Like, when are the times where you play her and she is fun?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think she also does something that I think we should try to avoid, which is really prolong the game.
Yeah, I just want to know what the upside of having Iona in the format is. Like, Prophet of Crucifix, I get it. It enables the things Commander's supposed to do, which is like comboing off, playing tons of stuff, playing huge things, you know, interactions that you maybe wouldn't otherwise see because now I'm untapping this guy every turn and I can use him in a way that was... What does Iona do?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Maybe Iona is just the answer to those cards that are too powerful and allow for too many combos. You know, maybe it's just one of those, like, she's like a hate bear that is also a 7/7 flyer.
She's just too oppressive. You know, I think there are plenty of answers. Iona's not really an answer. She costs that much mana.
Yeah.
That's not an answer. Like, to me, that's a problem.
Well, she's at the realm where people will be cheating her out more than hardcasting her. And I think that once that starts, it adds another notch onto the, we should take a look at this because the only way that people are playing this out are cheating it out is by cheating it out.
Yeah. There's, you know, a good thing is that Devoid came out.
Yeah. Devoid's nice.
And so she has gotten less powerful.
Yeah. And of course, Counterspell always exists for those that like to say, just counter it.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to be playing blue, but at least you can put Scour from Existence or something in your deck. Or you could have a bunch of cards now that you could still play because they're technically colorless. So I think that's a good way to make Iona sort of less oppressive. I still just, like I said, make me a list. I don't know what's in the pros column. If there's nothing in there, I don't see why you don't just get rid of her.
Yeah.
But they did just reprint her like 57 times. So people would probably be mad about that, I guess.
Hey, so they also did the Splinter Twin, so...
Oh, yeah, good point. Way to pour salt in the wound.
Yeah, I don't care. Kiki Jiki, our true king, is back now that Splinter Twin is gone, so go team.
You're, like, happy.
Of course I'm happy.
You know who's really happy?
Who?
Mingo freaking Malingo.
Because he's, like...
Because he's second in line for the throne now.
Yeah. He's like, I can kind of do it.
A little. Yeah.
I try real hard.
Come on, give me the crown, bro.
Just one time, like, Kiki goes out to lunch. He sits there and puts on the throne. sits on the throne, puts the crown on. It's like, heh.
That's how Mingo laughs. Clearly.
Nice guy.
All right. The next card on our list is Palancron.
Mm.
Palancron is 5BB for a 4/5 flyer. Creature illusion. When Palancron enters the battlefield, untap up to 7 lands. And then you can pay 2 and 2 blue to return Palancron to its owner's hand. This is one of those cards that's just super ripe for creating unlimited mana.
Yeah. It's got it all built into one card, essentially.
Yeah, you need something that mana doubles you, like just a high tide will do it. You know, that kind of thing. Anything that's just making your mana make double mana, you know.
Being able to cast Palancron for cheaper if you have a way to flash it in consistently. For instance, doing this with a sneak attack. Mm-hmm. Also another way to do it.
Flickering Palancron, yep. Which we're going to get into the next card, which is sort of the big card everyone's talking about as bannable. Yeah, any sort of like with Cabal Coffers and stuff like that, you can do crazy things.
Animar. Works well with Animar.
Yep. So it's just a infinite mana card that combos with so many things that, again, this to me is actually what Commander's about.
Palancron?
Is this type of thing. Is like finding these cards and these interactions where, you know, you play High Tide, you play Palancron, you get infinite mana, and now you have to do something with your infinite mana. That's 3 cards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally fine with it. You know, again, well, let's just... Deadeye Navigator is the next card we're going to talk about. And it's sort of the most talked about bannable card after Prophet of Kruphix.
Certainly.
And with Deadeye, you can easily go into infinite mana because you flicker Palancron and untap your lands, and that gives you more mana to flicker Palancron and untap more lands and flow more mana. But you still need a third card now that takes advantage of having infinite mana. So like I said, it's 3 cards. I'm fine if 3 cards in concert win the game. Like,
yeah, there are going to be many. So if you think about it, there are not very many one card combos that would just win you the game, right?
Right.
There are a little more 2 card combos, and then once you get to 3, though, there's
tons.
Yeah.
So if we start going, oh my gosh, this 3 card combo is like unstoppable. Well, yeah, but so are so many. Like, if we're going to start stopping 3 card combos, then we're going to have to ban like everything.
Yeah, well, you just put yourself in a very sticky situation. But Deadeye Navigator is one of those, again, one-card combo kind of cards. It's 4BB for a 5/5 creature spirit with Soulbound. So Soulbound says, you may pair this creature with another unpaired creature when either enters the battlefield. They remain paired for as long as you control both of them. So if you have a creature on the battlefield and you play Deadeye Navigator, you can Soulbound that creature to Deadeye Navigator. Or if Deadeye Navigator is on the battlefield and you play another creature, those two can Soulbound to each other as well because... as long as another unpaired creature enters the battlefield, and you can pair them. And as long as Deadeye Navigator is paired with another creature, each of those creatures has 1 in a blue activated ability. Exile this creature, then return it to the battlefield under your control. We talk a lot about flickering, and this is the ultimate flickerer because it comes back immediately, and it doesn't wait till the end of turn or whatever, and it comes back untapped. And you have the option to Soulbound again or Soulbound the Deadeye Navigator to another creature because you can flicker the Deadeye Navigator itself. You can abuse enter the battlefield effects. It protects itself incredibly well for a very cheap mana cost. And it's just very, very, very powerful.
And you can do it as many times as you have mana because it does not tap the Deadeye Navigator.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require tapping. It's very, very, very powerful. One of the little tricks I think a lot of people surprisingly don't know is the actual way to destroy or kill Deadeye Navigator with instant speed removal is to wait until they do flicker, and then when either Deadeye Navigator or the creature it flickers comes back into the battlefield, the Soulbound trigger will go on the stack.
Yep.
And at that point, with the Soulbound trigger on the stack, you path to exile Deadeye Navigator because the Soulbound hasn't completed yet. They can't actually re-flicker.
Yep.
So if you wait until Soulbound's already been established and now try and Swords to Plowshares, then they can flicker again and just dodge it. So once you know that trick, Deadeye is not quite as bad, although still really, really, really good.
Yeah, it requires you to have the right card in the right situation. At the right moment. Yeah, and you have to wait for the Soulbound trigger to go on the stack for the player to name essentially what creature they want to Soulbound it to, and then you can exile it, hopefully get rid of it in that period of time.
And hopefully you haven't already lost.
Yeah. Well, because Deadeye Navigator, I mean, in this kind of deck, I would just play Vedalken Orrery and then flash in another creature and then just have another Soulbound trigger and then flicker past that.
Yeah, there are ways around it. Anyway, so one of the things about Deadeye, And I think Deadeye is probably correctly sort of tagged as the most likely or the next in line for the banning or the next most powerful card that might need to get banned. And it is the most mentioned after Prophet.
Yeah. Makes sense. Those two pair very well together as well.
It feels like if you put Deadeye onto the ban list, you could actually take some cards off the ban list. You know, some cards like Primetime.
I think Primetime's still busted.
Maybe now with Eldrazi Displacer.
Yeah. Well, even just any flicker effect, because you're able to fetch non-basics. That's the problem with Primetime.
It's very, very good, but most of those other flickers, you can't do it like Deadeye. Like, you can't protect the flickerer. Like, Eldrazi Displacer can't protect itself.
True.
So you can get rid of half that combo at almost any time. Miss Meadow Witch, again, it comes back at end step, so that's not as good. Other instants from your hand that flicker things, that's a one-time usage. You know, I'm not saying 100% you could, but you could think about it. Sylvan Primordial maybe could come off. Like, it feels like there's actually a few cards on the ban list that are banned because of Deadeye Navigator, where Deadeye Navigator is like the real mastermind behind, and we arrested the wrong guys.
He's just been hiding because he's a spirit.
And he just flickers himself out every time the cops come knocking on the door.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do ban Deadeye Navigator, because I am sure this card is near the top of the potential list.
It feels like if they were going to do it, they would have. But, I would have said that about Prophet, too. So
yeah, it's funny, actually. I don't run into Deadeye Navigator very often.
I literally took it out of my rune deck and a couple others just because people do sort of like roll their eyes about it.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I've run into it, and it's okay. I wouldn't ban it, but I wouldn't ban anything. But I do see where the, I don't know, complaints come from.
Yeah, I do too. Now, this next card I also believe should be very high on that list, and it is Hermit Druid. Oof. This guy's a beating.
I mean, if you want to, you can build the deck where Hermit Druid just wins.
Yeah, immediately wins. And that's why it is, again, one of those sort of one-card combos, even though it requires other cards to go off with it. It's one in the green for a 1/1 creature human druid. For green, you can tap him and reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a basic land card. Put that card into your hand and all other cards revealed this way into your graveyard. So you play a five-color deck with zero basic lands. One activation of this means your entire deck goes into your graveyard. And you can essentially put anything you want in there, and there are numerous variations of the combo, but most of them involve some creatures that want to be in there. Laboratory Maniac, which lets you win the game if you draw a card when your library has no cards in it. Dread Return, which allows you to get creature cards from your graveyard back to play. You can flash it back as well.
Hermit Druid basically guarantees one activation, your entire library goes in your graveyard. And then, if you know that's going to happen every time, then you can just build it so that, hey, if these five cards are in my graveyard, I can win.
Yep.
And you can just guarantee those five-yard cards will go into your graveyard because Hermit Druid will do it every time because you have no basic lands.
Yeah, and it's incredibly hard to interact with. Whereas you can like path a Deadeye Navigator when it's trying to soulbound with a creature, you'd have to do something like stifle one of the triggers off of the creatures that comes into play, or like have a split second card in order to stop the madness that's happening.
Yeah, you might be able to exile their graveyard really fast or something. But again, these are just things that are more difficult to do.
Yeah.
And if we're saying Prophet Krufix is too powerful, because and Prophet literally dies to instant speed removal. It doesn't even have protection like Deadeye Navigator does. This card, again, I'm not saying I would ban it, but I do see that power level is pretty high.
Yeah, and there's lots of other ways to protect the combo as well. You can do it so quickly because this card is only 2 mana to get out and it costs 1 to activate, and there's lots of ways to just have it be done by turn 2.
You can do this turn 3, I think. You can probably do it earlier with a Soul Ring.
With a Soul Ring,
No, because you'd have to cast it on turn 2.
Yeah, but then if you're able to...
You'd have to get Anger. If you Entombed turn 1.
Or even just put out any Haste Enablers, like Concurrent Crossroads, turn 1.
Yeah, true. I mean, there's obviously ways to do it. I think that turn 3, 4 is more likely, but a turn 3 or 4 win is way too early. This is not modern.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's talk about some legendary creatures.
Okay. The first one we've mentioned on this show before, it's Narset, Enlightened Master. I think...
Not the Planeswalker.
I think this is the most powerful commander right now, although it's possible it's second place now, but
possible.
I'm gonna call her number one for now, but we'll have a little argument about that. So Narset Enlightened Master is 3 and Jeskai, 3 blue, red, white. For a legendary creature, human monk, she's a 3/2 with first strike and hexproof. Whenever Narset attacks, exile the top 4 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-creature cards exiled with Narset this turn without paying their mana costs. We talk about this all the time on the show. Cheating of mana costs, all broken things in Magic almost always come from the cheating of mana cost.
Yep.
And so this is just one of those ones where you do the infinite turns thing, infinite attacks thing. You know, you get, very, 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 very often Narset attacks one time and the game's over.
Yeah, the fact that she has hexproof is one of the biggest parts of this because it's very hard to get her off the battlefield as well. And oftentimes, by the time you can cast a 6-mana spell, you have other ways to grant that card haste and make sure they can attack immediately.
You have your scroll rack out and your divining top and your whatever else to stack the top of your library however you like. And you just keep doing that and you play a million extra turn cards, extra combat cards, and you just win.
Yep, good card. I don't think there's much to talk about. Other than that, I mean, Narset is just very powerful, and it's all on the card. And oftentimes you'll find that all the cards we talk about today, the reason why it's bannable is printed on the actual card. Hermit Druid's a little bit of a different case, but it's the reason. I mean, it's still the same thing, if you think about it.
Hermit Druid, just you sort of have to think about it more and know more cards, but yeah.
Yeah. Next up, one that I think could be bannable. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this.
Which is funny, because you play this card.
I do, but I don't play it that often, because it wins too much. It's Annamar, Soul of Elements, blue, red, green, teamer for a 1/1 legendary creature elemental, protection from white and black. Whenever you cast a creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Annamar, and creature spells you cast cost 1 colorless mana less, 1 generic mana less to cast for each +1/+1 counter on Annamar. So he cheats out creatures, he has protection from the 2 colors that has the most removal, and he can get gigantic, not to mention he helps you get things out so quickly, like Jyn Kataxias, any of the giant Praetors. Like, you can basically go nuts with Annamar, because he's very hard to remove, and he helps you get some incredible crazy combos really quickly.
Yeah, Annamar is extremely good, and again, it's cheating of mana costs. So this is going to be a theme. And sneaky, one of the sneaky reasons that Annamar is so good is the protection from white and black. Those are 2 of the big removal colors.
Yeah, it's so good.
And it just shuts out some decks. I mean, if you're just playing Alora, now you have 1 color that can do, you know, and that's blue. You're not, that's not your spot removal color.
You can slow down an Annamar deck, but oftentimes you'll find it very hard to win against it because the deck is built to take advantage of all the things that Annamar provides. So creature-based ramp, Wood Elves, Farhaven Elves, all those kinds of cards that fuel him but also ramp you at the same time. So it's easy to recast him, easy to get the engine back online.
It's also a card that goes infinite with a lot of other cards.
Yeah.
There's a whole ton of cards that go infinite with Annamar. Basically, any creature that comes in and untaps your lands can go in infinite. Any creatures that bounce other creatures or themselves have a possibility of going infinite.
Yeah, you'll play a Cloudstone Curio in this kind of deck, so you can just infinitely put creatures down. Ancestral Statue, which is just a common. If you have enough counters in Annamar, you just flicker it, and it just goes nuts.
Yeah. Annamar is very, very good. I would ultimately, the reason I think doesn't deserve banning is because it's creature-based stuff, and creatures are the most, like, commander decks are usually built to beat creatures.
Yeah.
Even then, Annamar will still win, which is how powerful it is, but it doesn't feel like I can't do anything against this. It feels like, oh, I just need to draw my board wipe and I need to blah, 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 but I have a chance.
Yeah, definitely. And I've heard Annamar referred to more as a glass cannon than anything else, and that when he wins, he does win hard, but it is very easy to disrupt at times as well. So that's why I believe it's not worth the ban, but it is potentially bannable.
Now, the last one, it's a little early to be saying this, but I do think this is possibly the most powerful commander now.
I said it. I called it.
You called it. I mean, it is, and it's the Annamar of Instants and Sorceries. It's Mizzix. It's the new Mizzix.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's very, very early, but I've played this deck a number of times now. I've played against this deck a couple of times. I've never seen it lose, the tuned versions. My own or playing against it. It's very, very, very good. Again, it's exactly Animar, except for Animar is doing what I said, creatures, which commander decks are built to beat. Mizzix is doing instants and sorceries a lot harder to beat.
Not to mention experience counters don't go away. Whereas if you kill Animar, the +1/+1 encounters are gone.
So and Animar starts over, whereas Mizzix just, as soon as she's back out on the battlefield, she's right where she was.
Doesn't care.
I'm not saying these decks are unbeatable. I'm not saying Mizzix is unbeatable, but it takes your opponents teaming up to take out Mizzix from the very start.
Yeah.
And that's just a hard thing to get everyone to do. Now, Mizzix may get to the point where everyone knows she's powerful enough that they do that.
But even then, your deck is built to be super resilient against the table and just be able to do so much stuff at instant speed and draw so many more cards than they are. Imagine that they're just playing a deck with without much card draw. Like,
yeah.
What are they going to do? I mean, like, it requires everyone to react to Mizzix and you don't have an answer. Well, you've just made everyone's chances of winning much less.
I think you can build decks to beat specifically Mizzix decks. Like, you play your Gaddock Teagues and you play your Thalias and you play your
Fleshbag Marauders,
Grand Abolishers, and your Dragonlord Jamokas, and your things that literally are like anti-instance and sorcery cards.
Yeah.
And so you can build decks that will beat Mizzix. But in general, Mizzix feels so powerful.
Yeah, it's very hard to deal with. It just always has an answer and has ways of just killing everyone in one shot.
And it's very, very consistent because, like you said, it has so much card draw. I think the versions that we built had something like 20 to 25 card draw spells.
Yeah.
That just means that you're cycling your deck, you're going to see all the same cards every game. It's not going to be like other decks where you're like, well, if I draw this card, then I do this. It's going to be, Mizzix is going to be like, when I draw this card, I do this, and then I get this, and I do this.
Yeah.
Very good. It's, again, it's very early, but it would not surprise me at all if Mizzix down the line sees a banning.
Yeah, it's good. I hope not, because I'd have to disassemble the deck, and that would make me very sad, because blue and red are two of my favorite colors.
Luckily, all the cards, the good cards in that deck are just good because they're in Modern and stuff, yeah. So they're not going to go down in price.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to instants and sorceries. First up, we have Cyclonic Rift. One in the blue instant, return target non-land permanent you don't own to its controller's hand, don't control to its owner's hand, close enough. And you can overload it for six in the blue, and you just do each non-land permanent gets returned to its owner's hand instead of just one.
Each non-land permanent you don't control.
Yeah, for that's 7 mana at instant speed. That's ridiculous.
This is another card that, like Consecrated Sphinx, just goes in every blue deck and has become very...
It is 100% a format staple.
Yeah, it's almost like Sol Ring. I think this, for blue decks, this is an auto-include. I don't have a single blue deck that doesn't have Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, there's no reason why you wouldn't. It's one of the best ways to pull yourself out from behind and to push yourself further into the lead. It helps out in every single situation, and the flexibility to sometimes... Because sometimes you will just bounce one non-land permanent back. It's incredibly powerful. I mean, the fact that you can just, at the end of someone's turn, after everyone's gone off and done their own thing, reset the entire board for 7 mana while keeping your own presence, I feel like that's one of the biggest swings you can do in Commander outside of just outright winning the game.
I mean, Commander is a format with so much card draw, so much big mana spells, that very rarely does it come down to card advantage is the reason that you win a game.
Yeah.
It can come down to, I have a lot of cards and I'm a counterspell deck, so I need to have that many. But it doesn't usually come down to raw card advantage, like somebody's top decking. And so Cyclonic Rift, the downside of it would normally be like that stuff's going back to their hands, and that doesn't, you know, that's not as good as destroying it. But it ends up being basically the same as, like, what if there was a spell and it cost a white and six color, sorry, a white and six generic, so six and a white, and it was instant speed and it said destroy all non-land permanents you don't control. That's insane. That's what Cyclonic Rift does.
Yeah, and people have to discard the hand size too very often.
Exactly. So they just actually do lose those cards. Even if they don't, they're just so far behind. Like,
yeah,
you know,
what are they going to do?
They've got 20 mana worth of stuff out on the table. You bounce it all back to their hand, they have 8 mana.
Not to mention any tokens.
Yeah, so they're like, I play two things, I guess.
Yep.
But you still have all your 20 mana worth of stuff out there. Yeah, this card is really good.
Once a card needs to be in every single deck that can play that color, you know that it's there's something
going on.
Going on, yeah. It may not be that it's supposed to be banned, but there's definitely something going on and you should pay attention to it.
I think right now, if I were actually going to ban cards, my number one would be Iona of what we've mentioned so far. But this would be my number two.
Very nice.
The next one is Tooth and Nail.
Oh, yeah.
It's a sorcery. It costs 5 and 2 green. It says, choose one. Search your library for up to 2 creature cards. Reveal them. Put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. Or put 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. But it has Entwine for 2. You can choose both of these options if you pay the Entwine cost. So for 9 mana total, you can tutor up 2 cards and put them directly into play.
Doesn't even need to be those 2 creatures that you you tutored up. It's any creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. So tons of infinite combos with this. 2-card infinite creature combos get immediately played thanks to Tooth and Nail. Not to mention, the fact that you can put any other creatures in your hand on the battlefield means that it's not conditional to you needing to have all of the sort of the pieces for the combo in the deck when it happens.
Right. It's like, yeah, so you don't have, oh crap, I accidentally drew this. Now I can't do the combo.
Yeah, so you draw 2 cards for 9 mana, the 2 best creatures you want at the time, and then you get to place 2 other creatures in your hand onto the battlefield.
I mean,
if you wanted to.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a Commander game where Tooth and Nail got resolved with Entwine and they didn't just win. I don't think that's ever happened.
Yeah.
There's too many two card infinite combos. You know, Kiki Jiki Pestermite.
Yep.
Just one of many that you can do.
Chaos and Triskelion is one I always hear about.
Yep. So it's just very, very easy to go get 2 cards that win you the game. So this becomes, we talk about Insurrection as like an instant win the game if it resolves card.
Mm-hmm.
Tooth and Nail actually is even more than Insurrection.
Yeah, card is insane. Next up, we have Yawgmoth's Will. 2 and a black, it's a sorcery. Until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard, and if card will be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile that card instead. I put this card on here just because the power level of being able to, in a single turn, again, we always talk about how if you're going to win big and you need to do it in a way that potentially could be stopped, you have to do it the turn you start to serve the process. And Yawgmoth's Will is one of those ways that is a great way to reclaim your entire graveyard if potentially you didn't combo off the first time or whatever, and just to get it going again because you still just need one turn. It's also great in any Storm decks. The card is very, very powerful, and I just feel like it hasn't been abused enough for it to potentially see banning. But I think it certainly can be bannable.
I mean, super high power level. I think probably one of the reasons, and one of our buddies, I think Josh Kim, or maybe it was Wes, brought up on Twitter when we were talking about this, was that there's a whole bunch of cards that are probably of bannable power level, but they're just pretty rare, and so people don't see them enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like Invoke Prejudice and stuff like that. And I think Yawgmoth's Will sort of fits into that same category where, I mean, it's crazy powerful. It's just probably most groups, play groups, don't see it enough to sort of raise like a big, you know, mob with torches and pitchforks to be like, ban this card, ban this card. You know, that's why the cards up near the top of the list are Prophet of Krufrix, Deadeye Navigator. They're cards from newer sets. They're not super expensive. There's a ton of them out there. Every play group has like 12 Prophet of Krufrixes in it. But every playgroup does not even have 1 Yawgmoth's Will.
Yeah, and it's like from the outset, it's much easier to look at a card like Yawgmoth's Will and be like, I'd rather have Consecrated Sphinx, you know, or I'd rather have this. I don't want a single until end of turn ability because what if I draw it early and I don't want to use it, you know? There are downsides to it, but at the same time, it is very often, if you play it correctly, play the card and win the game kind of thing.
Yeah, it's super powerful. It does require you to do a little bit of work, so.
Yep.
The next one is Mindslaver. It's 6 generic mana for an artifact, legendary artifact. You pay 4, tap and sacrifice the Mindslaver. And then it says, you control target player during that player's next turn.
Exciting. Basically, this card gets nutty as soon as you have a way to recur it.
And which nobody plays Mindslaver just to do it once. Yeah, they always have a way to recur it.
Like Doretti, Goblin Welder, lots of different ways to get this back on the battlefield. And after a while, you just start controlling everyone's turn.
Yeah, there's easy ways to control everybody's all their turns for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And so usually that just means you win.
It should mean you win.
It does mean you win.
You can
almost always everybody just scoops when you do it.
Yeah.
You're like, I can control all everybody's turns for because I can do this infinite times, and everyone goes, okay, you win.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously, I'll just have you attack you and not block and blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, I'll have you attack that other person, but it's just the worst attack ever because he can't make the other person not block until he gets around to
that. Yeah, that's a good point.
But basically, they can cause enough chaos to essentially play out the game exactly how it would be best for you, the player, and then when it comes to a one-on-one and you're still Mindslaver locking everyone, you'll be fine, you know?
Yeah, it's just not a super fun type of effect either. It's one of those effects where it's like, I sort of wish they never had this effect exist in the game.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like it breaks the game a little bit as far as how it should even go.
It's kind of like anti or something.
Yeah, it's just like, really? You're going to have a game and you're going to have effect in the game that makes one player just stop playing?
Yeah, immediately lose. That doesn't sound
not like just fun. Lose, just like I'm watching someone else play. Like, yeah. That's not an effect in the that should exist in the game. Like,
notably, they've definitely taken down a huge notch in more recent years, I feel.
Yeah.
Which is why you'll never see Sensei's Divining Top printed anytime soon, I don't think. It's one colorless mana, or one generic mana. It's probably the best artifact of all time. For one colorless mana, you can look at the top...
Second best.
Second best? Yeah, that's true. Look at the top three cards of your library, then put them back in any order, and you can tap the top to draw a card, then put Sensei's Divining Top on top of its owner's library. Sensei's Divining. I think it's Divining.
Yeah, I think it's Divining. Divination.
Yeah. Shivam gave me a little crap for saying it wrong last time. So
Shivam never gives crap to anyone. I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, this card's great. It can protect itself. That's the big one. Anytime someone tries to get rid of it, you just tap it and you draw a card. And guess what? Sensei's top is coming back to you the next time you draw a card. Looking at the top three cards and sorting them any way you want makes you make sure that you hit your land drops on time and make sure you get the spell that you need at the right time and that you can instant speed draw it also at any time. So it's a one-drop mana artifact. It is incredible.
It sets up miracle cards. It sets up cards like Jaleva, Kalia, Narset. Yeah. It's just very, very, very powerful. It also takes forever because people who have top out are just sort of using top all the time because they're only like, oh, I want this card on top. And then somebody else plays a card and they're like, never mind, I want this other card on top. Then somebody else, okay, never mind, I'm going to switch it again. And it's just like gets annoying and crazy. And I play the card in every deck that I can because it's so powerful, but it is annoying.
Certainly.
It's one of those cards like Sol Ring, which is... could go in almost every deck.
I think,
in fact, the only deck I wouldn't put it in, Mizzix.
Yeah. Even then, I'd put
it in
Mizzix.
That's how powerful Mizzix is.
Yeah.
I'm not putting in the cards that are like format defining because Mizzix is too powerful for that.
Yeah. She doesn't care about that. She's like, what? The top three. I'm drawing 50 cards right now.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what those top three cards are. I'm going to go through them in like half of a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Sol Ring. Sol Ring and Mana Crypt are both on this list. They do very similar things.
Actually, Sol Ring, I said this before the show, and I believe it. I actually would be excited if Sol Ring was banned.
Yeah.
It's like I'd get one card, one free slot in all my decks. And it's not like Sol Ring gives you any advantage. Everyone has a Sol Ring, so you're just so you're just even with everybody else because they have a Sol Ring in their deck and you have a Sol Ring in your deck.
It's just about who draws it early.
Which is boring to me. That's not interesting. That's not like I didn't like come up with some creative deck brew or something. That's just with those two cards, you know, you and I are even and I'm even with everybody because everybody plays Sol Ring because it's that good.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody just took it out, we'd still be on an even playing field, but now I have a chance at an advantage because the card I add might be better than the card you add.
That's a very good point. I like that reasoning a lot, too. Sol Ring, of course, I don't think is going to get banned anytime soon. Wizards has clearly shown that they want it in the format because it's been in every single Commander set since 2012, I believe. 2013.
Oh, man, why can't they ban it? It would be so awesome. I think, like, just think about that. All of a sudden, like, that card that you just wanted to fit in your deck but you couldn't find a spot for, there it goes. There it goes. And your deck didn't actually get any worse because everybody's deck got lowered the same amount.
You just have to play the more strict French commander, dual commander rules.
But that's for one-on-one.
Yeah, pretty much. Mana Crypt also, it's a zero-drop artifact, and it adds the same amount of colorless mana that the Sol Ring does, and it says at the beginning of each of your upkeep, flip a coin. If you lose the flip, Mana Crypt deals 3 damage to you. So it has the downside that it'll occasionally bolt your face, but you have 40 life.
And it only does that half the time.
Yeah, this card is equally nutty as Sol Ring.
I think if you banned Sol Ring, you would have to ban Mana Crypt because...
people would feel incentivized to get Mana Crypts, and they are not a cheap card, and I don't think that's what you want to do. But I don't think either of those cards are going to get banned. So sad day.
Crypt actually seems like it really should be, just based on, like, it's not that different than a Mox. In fact, it's probably better than most of the Moxes.
It's also pretty inaccessible price-wise.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, once you start talking about this stuff, you start thinking, like, well, I don't understand why the rules committee isn't consistent about, like, well, if Moxes are gone, then why the heck is... Like, tell me literally, what's the difference between a Mox and a Mana Crypt? I'll tell you what it is. The Mana Crypt's better.
Yeah. It is better. You can play it on turn one without having to worry about it and tap your mana for something else.
And it
else.
Gives you two mana rather than one mana.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Hey.
I said I didn't want to ban anything, and now it sounds like I'm saying to ban everything.
These are just bannable, Josh.
Yeah.
Re-clarify.
I'm fine. People play, you play Mana Crypt sometimes. It's fine. I just, you know.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I just Vandal Blast, and we're all good. The next one is my least favorite card of all time, Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Two in a red for an enchantment. It says non-basic lands are mountains.
As they should be.
So just all non-basic lands just turn into mountains. This card is just, it's Iona. Basically, it's to me, yeah. they're very similar. I this is even worse, because at least in Iona, most of the time you're playing a two-color deck, so it only turns off half your deck. But Blood Moon can oftentimes turn off all of your deck.
Yeah, and that really sucks. That is an awful feeling when someone plays Blood Moon and you look at your table and you look at your hand and just go, oh.
You can even have enchantment kill spells in hand. It won't really matter that much unless you've got untapped mana right then and it's instant speed.
That's why I play this in my mono red deck, because it just doesn't affect me that much.
It doesn't affect you at all.
Yeah.
It might turn off like a couple of non-basics, but big deal.
I would even play this in like a Xenagos deck where you only have one other color.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be playing that many crazy non-basics.
Well, I wouldn't play it because I want my soul to stay intact, but I understand why others would.
Right, of course. Anyway, let's move on to some lands. We have two lands, and I think these have a much stronger case of being banned.
Because, these are in the Mana Crypt category for me.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Artifacts can be removed. Enchantments can be removed. Creatures can be removed. Lands are the card that they don't use the stack when you play them. They sort of skirt around the
rules. They can't be countered.
They can't be countered. And in general, people don't run that many ways to get rid of a land card in the game. And thus, they are just, I think, that much more inherently powerful because it's just hard to deal with. First up, Gaia's Cradle. It's an expensive card, but it taps to add green mana to your mana pool for each creature you control.
This is one of the high rollers cards.
This is a high rollers card. And again, that's why I wouldn't be upset if they banned it, because it's not like that many people had this in their deck anyways. But if you did have this deck card in your deck, it's so powerful. It's a land that could generate anywhere between one and a literal million mana.
It's another cheating of mana cost type of card. It's lands are supposed to tap for one mana. The whole game is balanced around that. Now you've got a land that can potentially tap for 27 mana.
Yeah.
And it's play this like, with things like Palancron or stuff like that, and you're untapping it, you know, Fate Stitchers and things like that, and all of a sudden, like, you can just break the game wide open.
Yeah.
I think from a power level standpoint, though, it's not bannable on the level of some of these other cards, because it does require some stuff. You have to get a lot of creatures on the board, and they have to stay there for a second.
Yeah.
So it's not like it just does something by itself. You have to be able to use the mana on something, too, that's going to kill me right now. So there's a lot of steps you've got to take. It is very, very powerful, but...
Yeah, it's just so hard to deal with, and that's why the card is so, so good. Now, of course, if you have no creatures, it sucks, but it doesn't... I mean, you're not going to be putting this in a deck that cannot use it to its maximum effect.
Now, what do you think about the enchantment version of this card?
Sarah's Sanctum. This is a good time to mention our good friend Jason Alt on the show. He called that this card was a keeper.
Yeah, back when the Daxos deck came out, he went on... we should say Jason is one of the co-hosts of Brainstorm Brewery, and he was on that cast, and I think on a few places, basically saying, hey, Sarah's Sanctum is going to jump up in price. You might want to grab him now. And lo and behold, Sarah's Sanctum has shot up in price.
Yep.
Probably exactly for the reasons Jason said.
This is why you listen to the finance guys, because they speculate on stuff, on finance and stuff, but they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, as a side note, if you don't listen to Brainstorm Brewery, You really need to, especially if you're worried at all about things like price spikes and the reasons why some cards go up and some go down. I mean, your wallet will thank you for listening to those guys. You don't have to like do crazy stuff like speculate on the MTG finance market or any of that stuff. It'll just help you in ways like, oh, I need to pick up that card now because I may want one. And it's not like I'm going to buy 52 of them and try and make money. I just would rather save the $20, you know, or whatever by grabbing it now rather than a couple months.
Yeah.
Can't speak highly enough of those guys. The show's really good. It's really funny. You should definitely check it out, even if you're not interested in saving money, though. Who's not interested in saving money?
And we had Jason on the show once upon a time, so hopefully we'll bring those guys back.
Those guys are fun to play dice with.
Oh, yes. That was, oh, man, I can't wait. Jason posted on our Reddit thread saying, like, man, wish GP Vegas was every year. And I'm like, I'm right there with you, buddy.
Vegas is always there. I just want to say that. It doesn't move around.
Yeah, even through the apocalypse. And the other final card on our list is one that I've only seen played once because our friend Craig Blanchett owns a copy.
Oh, I've seen him play it a few times.
Yeah, it is the Tabernacle at Pendril Vale. Definitely a high rollers card. It's a legendary land, and it says all creatures have, quote, at the beginning of your upkeep, destroy this creature unless you play one generic mana, end quote.
It's this card is insanely good. It just totally screws over creature-based decks.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, they're just taxed so hard.
And you can't get rid of it. Now, there is a creature version of this called the Magus of the Tabernacle. And the guy's just a 2/6.
So there's Pendril Mists, I think, is an enchantment version.
Yeah.
But the fact that this is a land, it can't be countered, and it's quote-unquote free to play.
Yeah.
It's very, very powerful. You can play it very early.
Oh, yeah. And everyone just has to... You time walk everyone, essentially, because they have to be able to pay the upkeep cost.
Now, you know what deck does want this?
What's that?
Mizzix.
Oh, of course.
But I don't have $700. Well, I mean, for that card. I would build three whole new decks rather than...
Yeah, buy a single Tabernacle with crappy art.
Hey, come on. Yeah, it's pretty crappy.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah, this card is broken. You know, I don't know why it's not banned. I mean, it's just because the ban list can only get so big. And again, I think it's the same reason we talked about, which is there's not going to be a huge outcrying to ban this card because people just don't see it that often.
Yep, pretty much. So that does it for our list of bannable EDH cards. Potentially bannable.
I literally don't think any of them should be banned except Sol Ring, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, it would definitely throw the format for a loop and I think make games a little more interesting too.
But you know... Like, remember when we did the Mizzix episode, I keep talking about Mizzix, and I said I was thinking about taking Sol Ring out of that deck.
Yeah.
But the argument to keep Sol Ring in, and the reason I eventually did keep Sol Ring in the deck, was that it is so powerful on turn one because you can cast a turn two Mizzix, that just that one scenario is worth keeping the card in the deck.
Yeah.
I would love it if it was banned and I didn't have to worry about keeping a card in the deck for that one purpose of like, once in a while, I just get a free win. Commander's not about free wins. It's not tournament structure. I want good games.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Interesting. Well, to the listeners, please let us know what cards do you think should or could be banned in EDH. Please tweet at us at CommandCast or leave a comment on our YouTube videos or comment on the Rocket Jump site at rocketjump.com/thecommandzone.
And, Kitchen Table Fables. We really want to know what you think. You know, did you like them? Do you want to see more of them? We need to hear that stuff because if we don't hear a lot of people saying, make more, please, then we probably won't.
Yeah, and as a side note, we cannot accept anyone's ideas for future episodes. We've had a few people email and tweet us being like, hey, I have a really great idea. You guys should do this. And as soon as we see that text, we actually are legally obligated to stop reading. It's the same with Rocket Jump. It's the same whenever someone sends an idea, be like, you guys should do a short film about this. I wrote a script and an idea. Will you listen to it? And unfortunately, for legal reasons, and it sucks, I know, I understand this, but if we ever were caught in a situation where we did something off of a suggestion, we would, you know, we basically don't own the idea.
Yeah, we have to own the ideas that we're producing.
Yeah. So Sorry,
guys. We appreciate it.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
And we appreciate it more if you just share the content.
That's actually the best thing you can do, is show it to your playgroup, email it to your other friends that play Magic, and just get the exposure out there for the series and for the episode. So Kitchen Table Fables, go to youtube.com/The Command Zone Podcast, and you'll see them right there. You can't miss them. They're called The Flicker, Permission, and Basilisk Collar.
Yay!
Okay, time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. We talked about how busy Jimmy's been lately.
Jimmy, yeah, because I'm working for Rocket Jump. I'm part of the shorts team, so we're creating 25 or 24 short films all throughout 2016, and the very first one we came up with is out. It's going to be out Tuesday, today. And you can find it at youtube.com/rocketjump. This is also the same place that has Rocket Jump, the show that we were talking about on Hulu, and Video Game High School, which I was in and which Josh edited the trailers for season 3-4. So you guys should check it out. The first short is up. I think it's really funny. It's a parody of 24, and it's called, currently, as of right now, the Thursdays we're recording it, it's called Nuclear Hiccup.
Be-doo. Be-doo. Be-doo.
Be-doo. I love the phones at CTU.
Beep, it's pretty good, actually. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're like a sound effect guy. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you know, I love it. So yeah, check it out, youtube.com/rocketjump. But before you do that, make sure you watch Kitchen Table Fables at youtube.com/The Command Zone Podcast.
Man, there's just a ton of stuff. We're like, between the short film of Rocket Jump, Kitchen Table Fables, yeah, this podcast, like, man, we got you guys covered.
Yeah, if you want to cook stuff, I have a cooking show too, but I won't talk about that now.
It's called Feast of Fiction.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff out there. A lot of content being created. Follow me on Snapchat. Okay, let's move on to the cleanup step. Our sister podcast is the Masters of Modern. They've been killing it recently. People have been posting their content to the subreddit of Magic, talking about their interview with Tom LaPill. You can find them on Twitter at TheMMCast or at rocketjump.com/TheMMCast. It's Ben Bateman, Alex Kessler. They talk about Modern, and with GPLA coming up, it's going to be very exciting. I think we're going to try and find something to do.
And we got Modern Pro Tour.
Modern Pro Tour, yeah. Very, very exciting. Anyway, make sure you guys check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern.
Our editor is Terry Robertson. Great work, Terry. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations and that sweet Soul Ring intro.
Oh, the coolest intro ever.
That's at the start of our videos on YouTube. You can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG.
Yeah, and send him some love. Tell him that we sent you. And, well, I guess that's it for today's episode, Josh.
Thanks, everybody.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.